Welcome to the Evasion of the Remake podcast. This is March 13th, and we're recording for March 30th. And gotta tell you, daylight savings times have really fucked me up this morning. And apparently my computers and everything's just not working that great. And today we are talking La Femme Nikita and Point of No Return. And of course with me is my lovely co-host, Trish Coughlin.
Hello, hello, hello.
And now you guys might remember a couple weeks ago, Jeff said he might be ducking out soon. He did buy a new business and his time is extremely limited. So until he's got that kind of settled and his scheduling figured out, he'll be away from the podcast. So we have a returning co-host with us today, our Shemp to our Three Stooges.
Mm-hmm. I'm not doing the voices and stuff.
No.
Sam Stepanenko, you might remember from the They Live podcast. So he's going to be filling in for Jeff in that spot for a while.
Yeah. And to be fair, like, don't misunderstand. Because we're doing La Femme Nikita, it wasn't that, like, you know, Jeff, you know, mysteriously disappeared under...
No. But we
exist still.
We are taking our opportunity to do as many foreign films as we can while he's away.
Hell yeah.
But poor Sam seemed to have the Jeff luck going with this one.
Tell you what it's like to sit in Jeff's chair. Yes, watching not one, but both of the movies was a painful experience just getting them to work.
Oh, crap.
Yeah, try watching one on streaming, legitimately, through Crave. And it froze and skipped and then stopped entirely. And then I had to finish watching it a second day. And then the DVD that I bought for Point of No Return played just fine until the last 10 minutes. Then it froze too. So, Jeff, thank you. Thank you so very much. I hope you listen to this.
the Jeff luck is transitive, I guess.
It's weird.
That is so strange. Maybe it's that seat.
I was going to say, I should just keep sitting in the chair of woe and maybe...
You were fine when you were in the chair of woe.
Yeah, we need the other chair. Yeah, you need the chair of woe. That's the chair of woe. I think I'm in the seat of woe,
yes.
You got the comfy corner of the couch. I mean, well, they're both comfy corners of the couch, but...
I guess, but like maybe you just pay for the comfort, like just karmically.
You know what? Maybe it's that specific microphone. It's the coolest microphone stand I've got, and you got to pay for it in spades.
Yeah, so the universe equalizes it out.
Yeah. If you get the cool one, and the only reason I don't have the cool mic is just because the setup in front of me doesn't allow for it.
For sure.
Yeah, so... Because it was supposed to be mine.
Yeah, well, karma's a bitch.
I'm sure there's a reason why. I actually figured it out. I could technically swing it from where it is over here, but I'm like, at this point, it makes more sense to have it over there.
Yeah. So. Was it the French one that you were having troubles with?
Both of them.
Oh, both.
Both of them. It wasn't just one. It was both of them. Yeah. But the French one was tougher.
Yeah.
Because it skipped a lot and froze a lot.
I had trouble finding it because I was trying to get like at least like a subtitled one. And I had trouble finding one, and then I eventually found this, like, overdub, which I have to say, with foreign movies, an overdub is just, it's not as good, because I like to hear the voices of the actors.
I do, too, but being that I'm guessing most of our audience that listens to us do speak English, I did try to find the English trailer for the French film, rather than run the French, and it is a weird fucking trailer, so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll run that in a little bit, but you probably agree how weird and patchworky it is and the voices and whatnot. But I did see it in subtitles, so
as did I. Yeah,
yeah,
no, yeah. Like I mean, I originally saw this in subtitles. Like when you mentioned it, I remember where I was when I first saw this movie. Like I don't know if you want.
That's funny. We can do that. I don't remember when I first saw this. I think it was probably with Sam, but. I honestly don't remember when, because I didn't remember too much about the movie, even though I know I'd seen it. And I think we sought this out after we watched Innocent Blood.
I honestly don't remember.
And probably Leon the Professional, but...
No, I remember that seeing this movie shortly after it came out. I don't think I saw it in the theater.
Maybe not.
But I definitely saw it on VHS.
Yeah,
like
I did see Point of No Return in the theater. Yeah.
Remember that.
I had, as a lot of the times, I got screener passes through the shop, so I... that tells you how long I've been there. Because nice. Point of no return was 93. Fuck me.
What was Innocent Blood that you'd mentioned?
Innocent Blood starred Anne Perelaud.
Anne Perelaud?
Thank you. She always does the convincing French thing. I don't know if it's remotely accurate.
Oh, it's not remotely accurate, but I'm trying.
Yeah, okay. So you're just faking me out. Yeah. And honestly, I don't remember a lot about it. Vampire movie. It was kind of cool. And she was dead sexy in that movie.
Nice. Yeah, she was. And yeah, it's not a particularly memorable film.
No.
I mean, it's pretty typical of vampire movies in the early 90s, late 80s. Yeah.
And if I did some research, which I didn't for that movie, but I think that got remade into by America under a different title, so
we'll have to look into that.
Or at least there was something with some glaring similarities to it. Mm-hmm. So.
That was, yeah, I didn't acknowledge it as a remake, but yeah, it really was.
Yeah. So
cool.
Yeah, so we're talking about Luc Besson's, probably the one that put him on the map, La Femme Nikita, and you guys don't know the name, you should, but shame on you, but most recently, Lucy, Fifth Element, of course, and my personal favorite,
yeah,
Leon the Professional, which I got some factoids to add to a little later on. Nice. When it's a little more relevant. I'm going to save up the good stuff.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah.
And some other interesting trivia about Luc Besson is he's responsible for Arthur and the Invisible, the children's series.
I did not know that.
Did not know that.
He was the writer. He was a creator and writer.
Awesome.
For the Arthur and the Invisible series, yeah.
You know, the more I learn about, like, Luc Besson, at least him as a creator, like, and it's not going to be the first time we talk about him on this show, because I do want to do Taxi at some point, but...
Yes!
Yeah.
I've seen that.
And the okay remake of it, which it was not Luc Besson by any means.
Playing it fast and loose with the word okay.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing is, like,
Beth... Oh, come on, I like Queen Latifah. I really wanted to like the movie.
Oh, no, I like her, but you can't... I can eliminate her from her work. I can still like her and just hate what she's done.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what I'm doing with this one.
Yeah.
But you brought up Queen Latifah, and there's a remake that she's in that we should do called The Last Holiday.
Oh, yeah. That was a remake, wasn't it?
She's going to get some time with us as well.
So. Yeah, but, you know, as you're talking about Luc Besson, like, I think this is kind of when I heard of him first through The Fifth Element, and then, like, I kind of looked through some of his other stuff. Like, I found La Femme Nikita at, like, a video store.
Yeah, I think this was me working my way backwards when I found this one as well, and I think I'd probably seen Point of No Return first, and then I wanted to see La Femme Nikita, and little baffled about the title change on it, but...
Yeah, well, I guess the trivia of that is like, it was something different. It was like The Professional or The Specialist.
Oh, it was actually a Specialist at one point, which became it got given to Stallone for that movie, which in and of itself was actually, they were going to give it to...
Seagal?
Seagal, thank you. And then they eventually, he turned that movie down, and then it became the Stallone movie that everybody forgot about.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to say that Steven Seagal turned down a movie that was forgettable seems really unusual to me, because that's what he's made a career doing. Is
doing forgettable action movies.
Yes. Yeah. So it must have been really bad if he turned it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know I've seen The Specialist, and I can't tell you anything about it. So
yeah,
at one point I think it was called The Assassin.
Yeah, I think in overseas markets they changed it back to like The Assassin or something. Yeah, that because, was more direct, because Point of No Return doesn't translate very well.
No, now La Femme Nikita has inspired, of course, Point of No Return, the remake, but not one but two television series. Yes. One, both that were filmed in Canada. La Femme Nikita, starring Peta Wilson, ran from 1997 to 2001, and has its own devout fan base. I don't think it aired much in the U.S. It aired on the USA Network, but it aired in a lot of Canadian markets. So
yeah, I remember watching
it. It was pretty big in Canada. And then, of course, the more recent 2010 to 2013 CW attempt on it, which was just Nikita starring Maggie Q.
Yeah.
And probably would have got canceled, but they were thinking Netflix market, and the fourth season only got 6 episodes just to tie it off.
Yeah.
But it's good on them. A lot of networks wouldn't even bother. So,
To
give it a fourth season, just to give it a cap. But everybody's thinking, it's fascinating to read something like that, where they're actually coming back just so they can get a Netflix.
Yeah, like for those on-demand services. Yeah,
and to give
Amazon,
a complete
Netflix,
thing.
Hulu.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, nice short seasons, 10, 13 episodes too, right? Compact.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd never seen the Meg Q one. I did see some of the Peta Wilson stuff.
Yeah, I saw a bunch of the Peta Wilson stuff. So
not a ton, but I remember liking it. But
yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, to be honest, this character does lend itself to, like, an ongoing...
Yeah, you watch this movie and it happens adventures. Over... At least the original movie happens over a grand years. Period of time.
It really does, yeah. Yeah, and I don't think the series are intended to be the same character. Like, based on what I was able to read, is they call these female assassins Nikitas.
Yeah.
Rather than Nikita from the movie, right? So mm-hmm. it's very...
Yeah, I noticed no Bobs were in
it's
those
It's like the
series.
Theory of James Bond.
Yes.
It's yeah. just a code name.
Well, it does make sense. I actually kind of missed that Bridget Fonda wasn't called Nikita in Point of No Return.
I was disappointed as well. I mean, considering how... I mean, we're getting into the actual analysis at this point, but how much of it was note for note, at least for the first half.
Yes. Right?
Including the dialogue.
Yeah.
Right, was almost note for note.
Yeah.
A lot of it, yeah. It was very close until the reworked ending, and I'm not sure for the better, but...
No. Yeah. They reworked the ending, and I think they did a serious rework on the love interest, which was not good.
Well, that changed it. Actually, that even that minor change changes that character quite a lot.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, so let's actually get into the French one first. Written and directed by Luc Besson, yeah. Starring and Parlaud. There you go. Marc Durette.
Durant? Oh, I don't have his name.
Marc Durette. Okay. Durette, who is Rico, and Patrick Fontana. Hey, thank you for having a name I can pronounce. The IMDb was so fucked because Patrick Fontana was just a minor character.
Coyote. Yeah, and like Chucky Kerio is...
Yeah, they wound up listing him in, I think, the order of their appearance.
Yeah, Bob is way down.
What did you say?
Chucky Kerio.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, I wasn't going to try to pronounce that name either.
And he's easily been in a few movies. Yeah, like, easily I
recognize
the big, him.
Yeah, I recognize him right away. Easily the most recognized actor in this movie. And
Jean Renault. Well, sorry, it's kind of a tie there.
Jean Renault.
Yeah, but his
I was waiting for him. I saw him in the credits. I'm like, too. Oh my God.
And his role was pretty minor, but it was great.
Yeah.
Jean Renault being the next biggest star in this movie. But that guy. He was in GoldenEye and The Patriot. So if anybody's trying to figure out the name that I can't pronounce to save my life.
He was also in Addicted to Love. He was the man that Meg Ryan was trying to...
Jean Renault, right, everybody should know. He really broke out from France into the professional into an international stardom. So he did really well with that. Jean-Hugues Anglade was Marco. And he was most recently in... Well, maybe not most recently, but probably most famously known for Taking Lives. So
Yeah,
with Angelina Jolie. So
we got a big cast.
Yeah. So, general gist of it: young girl,
young drug addict.
Yeah, young drug addict. They're knocking over some dude's store, which is actually this gang, a small gang of drug addicts, and one of them was knocking over. They were knocking over his father's shop
because he had keys and access.
Yeah,
and it's a pharmacy.
And he thought he knew where the good stuff was.
And he, which
he does not.
No, and they're fairly well armed. The French one's really strange because, you know, dad comes down, there's the confrontation between father and son, and the other guys are kind of goading things into action, and they must have set off an alarm somewhere. Nikita's just so in,
she's out,
she's totally out, she just needes the fix, and she's in the throes,
but not as out as the girl they're dragging around by her ankle.
I thought that was a dude. I couldn't figure out who they were dragging.
That opening scene where they're dragging somebody,
yeah, and that is in both movies. But it was a lot more noticeable in the original film.
There's so much strength in that open, just seeing them dragging that person.
She's way out of it, and they're looking for their next big fix. It's very clear that they really need to get their drugs and get their drug on now.
But the silent arm trips and these cops, I don't think they really want to arrest anybody.
No, they're super prepared for shooting people.
I had to say, like, a lot of them, you know, the guys with the guns, sure, but when they killed Zap, who's really just a guy with a baseball bat who that was his thing, was
an axe.
Zapping things.
It was an axe, yeah.
And he was chopping shit.
Yeah.
They still shot him down.
They did. That is my issue with that opening scene in both movies, is how many freaking cops there were.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a robbery call. One patrol car would have showed up in a normal circumstance. I mean, let's face it, it is movies, so of course it's going to be a little overblown.
Yeah.
But really, I mean, there were tons of cop cars, and they had
SWAT gear,
semi-automatics and SWAT gear, and like they were ready for a war, and they didn't even know what they were attending.
What's weird is, like, I'm looking at, like, do the French police have that much armory? I'm like, the U.S. cops, I totally buy that. But the French cops, I don't buy having that much armory on them at the time. I just didn't think of it.
No kidding. Is it, like, everything's response to, like, a terrorist attack or something?
No.
That, like, we'll just assume it's terrorism and then go from there.
Yeah, no, it just goes off. It's just insane.
Because that's how well-armed they were.
They really were, yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. I made one note that was just something I noticed is the cop in the French film that she kills, a lot more handsome than the one in the American film.
Okay. I hadn't noticed, honestly.
I did. I was like, oh, no, don't shoot him.
I did feel a little bit, yeah, I felt bad for that guy, you know. They do all the shooting. He comes in, and she's just been laying under the counter this whole time with her headsets on. I'm not even sure she's overly aware of what's going on around her.
No, she's pretty zoned out.
She's pretty zoned out, but
aware enough to grab the gun.
Yeah, there's a gun that slides near, and she sneaks it underneath her leg. And when all the shooting's over, the cops come in and try to help her, and she just calmly, like, pulls the gun out and then shoots the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so cold.
Yeah.
It was very emotionless.
Yeah.
And there's a little pin I want to put into this. I want to talk something talk about later on about that particular part of this movie.
Yeah.
Because it ties into something from the other movie that I noticed when I was watching it as well.
Ah.
Yeah. Now, something I really like about this film as a whole was how it handles passage of time, which is quite a bit. And well, I think we'll get into that as it goes along. I don't think Point of No Return doesn't handle it
so immediate.
Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah, everything happens a lot quicker in Point of No Return, and this literally happens over more logical times.
It doesn't, because they talk about the amount of time that's passed, but they mention it verbally rather than visually, like in the Besson film.
It's still a lot less.
Yeah,
in Point of No Return.
Well, not even just the Besson film; they do make mention of it, where it's like you need this many years to train somebody. I'm like, okay, that's very realistic. Yeah. I get that.
Well, the one thing I like about Point of No Return is because it happens in America, she gets a death sentence.
Yeah,
they don't have it in France, so she just gets 30 years, and then it skips to, you know, they have the whole trial and she freaks out in the trial and she thinks she's getting lethal injection. I think she does. Like, they got her strapped to a chair, but it's so bizarre. She's calling for her parents.
Calling for her mom, specifically her mother.
I think she knows that they're going to kill her, but they do. It's a faked suicide in the end.
Yeah, because she was given 30 years.
Yeah.
So I was a little puzzled by that scene as a whole.
Yeah, I think
was very much the destroyer type of fake out.
Yeah, right?
where they fake the death and keep the person alive. In both movies, but that reminded me of the destroyer character from the Remo Williams movie, I should say.
Yes.
Right?
Which I hope we get to talk about soon, because I heard it was going back into development. So.
Really.
I quite like the Remo Williams movie, but I don't think a lot of people did.
Fred Ward?
At least at the time.
Yeah,
Fred Ward.
And somebody in Asian face?
I don't recall.
I don't think it was really an Asian actor.
No, it wasn't really it was somebody famous, too.
Yeah, they were not Asian.
They were definitely not Asian.
We could open IMDb, but we're not talking about that movie, we're not.
My fault for referencing it, but it was relevant.
But I don't know, like, in that scene, though, I kind of figured, like, she was aware that they were going to kill her, like, because she's brought to a secret place, these people are pulling out needles, I think she knows she's going to die. But yeah, like, in the context of making a show of it, they have to make it look like just an accidental suicide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the first time we see her cognizant of her reality. Well, yeah. I guess it clicks in a bit in the trial as well. But
yeah,
but at the same time, I think she was still going through withdrawal.
Yeah,
right? So I think the reality of the situation was kind of lost on her that they shouldn't and couldn't be doing it.
Yeah,
right.
I think because
she was very emotional in that scene. And it certainly carried better than it does in the other film.
Yeah, I think she plays more the addict, the drug addict in that one.
Do you feel there's overacting on her part in this one, or is that happening more in Point of No Return? I felt like maybe Point of No Return was overacted a little bit, or maybe after my best friend's wedding, I think I really don't like Dermot Vermoulder.
I wrote that down. That's in my notes. Where is it?
I was going to mention it too.
It's hard to like Dermot Mulroney after watching this and my best friend's wedding. Yeah. Like, he made a living out of just being a dick in the 90s. Like, somebody no sane woman should have any time for.
I'm starting to think I just don't like him as an actor, but we'll get to that.
Because, like, the love interest in this French one, I'm like, I get it. I'm on board.
Yeah, no, and that's very important, and I don't want to skip too far ahead on that, but, well, we skip around anyway, but like everybody knows that.
We were talking about her addiction, or the way she became the addict, and she was by far better at playing the damaged young woman.
Yeah,
I think so too, than Bridget Fonda. I think there's a bit of intensity to Bridget, but
she played it down. She was much more low key.
Yeah,
and the anger that Nikita carried, was not in Point of No Return. Like, she was just a very angry young woman.
Yeah,
yeah,
and it showed. I mean, that scene that they left out. Well, they didn't leave the scene out, but they changed it quite significantly in Point of No Return was where she stabs the guy in the hand with the pencil.
Yes.
Yes. Right. Yeah, the police officer that's taking her statement.
Yeah, and then and then after she does it, she shouts that her name is Nikita at him.
Yeah.
Right? That was not in Point of No Return, and that was really, I think, where you got to see how angry this young woman was.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I agree. The approach to the characters between the two films, especially how close they mirror each other for at least the first 75% of their films.
Yeah.
To see the different approaches where it was kind of interesting. And I totally agree with you. The intensity of her character in the French film is far, far more reaching.
Yeah. And when you're talking about that particular point where she stabs the cop, I was thinking of the part where, like, she almost bites that guy's ear off.
There's that too, which
during the training.
Mm-hmm.
She's just bloody, just blood coming down out of her mouth, and she's just like dancing. Like,
well, yeah, after this she wakes up in this secret facility, training facility, and is introduced to Bob, played by the guy I can't pronounce.
Jackie Cario.
Who is amazing, and he's by far my favorite actor in this film. There's just something about his voice and his cadence and how he relates to the character that I find a little more believable.
Well, and last time I was on, we talked about actors who can show you what they're thinking with their faces, and he's really good at that as well.
Mm-hmm.
He's another very good facial actor. I mean, I think that's the thing that makes the best actors are the ones who can convey something without saying anything.
Yeah, he's got that quiet intensity. But I think to also, like, to compare it, I found the relationship between him and Nikita less, like, pervy than the one between Gabriel Byrne and Bridget Fonda. Like, the one between Gabriel and Bridget Fonda is, like bordering on, like, fucking inappropriate. And his relationship with her is, like, he's fatherly towards her, and he might have some sort of feelings to her, but it's not as pervy, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's
not as obsessive.
Yeah, not as obsessive. There's a genuine concern for her, but I think he's like, he steps back. It kind of goes more kind of patronly than it would be.
Yeah, I agree. There, it's a little less disturbing than the American relationship. And yeah, they tried to up his role in Point of No Return by creating this weird love triangle between her and Bob, and
but that's a whole thing that I find in some movies that they take from another area of the world and bring it to America. They're like, well, can we just like shoehorn some fucking love story in here? No, you don't need to do that. It's not necessary. With this movie, there is a love story, and it's fine. Like, just have
it doesn't need to be messed with. You're right. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
You don't need to fuck it up with anything new. That's really creepy. I'm sorry. Gabriel Byrne, like, I watched it again. I'm like, I didn't realize how creepy this whole thing was
when I first Byrne watched it. Gabriel Byrne does creepy sexual predator very well. I mean, I mean, one of my favorite movies, Cool World, same type of character. Very
for sure.
Creepy, sexually needy man.
Yeah.
We're probably going to get some weird emails about your favorite, one of your favorite movies is Cool World.
Have you actually watched that movie?
I love Cool World.
It's entertaining.
It's not a good movie. I'm not going to lie, but it certainly is fun.
It's fun and it did something different. I think that's the other point about it. I liked how it was slightly different than some of the crap you were getting at the time frame. I was like, oh, it's new. Somebody's trying something. I appreciate that.
Yeah. And the music was so good.
The music in that movie was great. Okay, so Bob wakes her up, gives her the whole spiel. I'm like, I love the whole show the picture thing of the graveyard and her funeral and the whole suicide thing or whatever.
Yeah.
And the option is to go through this training, or she can wind up in row 8, plot 30.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad you wrote that down. I'm like, shoot, I should have written that down because it's important.
Yeah, because it's different in the other one,
too. It is different in the other one. In the other one, it is row 48, plot 12.
Yeah, for some reason.
I don't know why that makes a difference. They obviously didn't care.
Maybe that's because the American screenwriter had to earn his screenwriting credit.
I guess, yeah, it's like we have to change the plots.
There were two screenwriters.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Their screenwriting credits. So credits. One got to pick the lot.
One of only had two credits.
FYI, just to let you know, location of a plot is important to know because the one time I went to Paris, we were looking for Jim Morrison's grave, went to the wrong fucking cemetery. It's very important.
Well, the plot in row is always important, but the address of the cemetery is even more important.
And then we finally found where we were going, and that cemetery was closed. So we missed the
whole
thing.
No Jim Morrison for you.
Yeah, the Jim Morrison, the cemetery where he's in is closed, like after like 7 p.m.
Oh, Jesus. I don't understand why cemeteries have hours, but
vandalism.
Yeah. Especially.
Because the living are shitty. Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. I get that.
You have to protect the dead from the living assholes.
So we get this interesting training montage as she starts meeting training people. Because what option would you take?
Yeah.
And after kind of her first round, we do see her, like, she must be full-on illiterate, I think. She's kind of teaching her to read. Yeah. She doesn't know how to use a computer at all. It's even weirder in Point of No Return.
It is.
She's trying to smash the mouse in Point of No Return.
I felt like, that was way overdone.
Yeah, I'm like, are you, like, two?
Yeah, do you require some special help?
Yeah.
Right? We missed something that was in both movies, which I think is important, too, though, is when she grabs Bob when he comes back into her room to find her answer.
Yeah.
And she tries to get out.
Oh, yes. I totally skipped ahead. Yeah.
That's important.
That is very important. Yeah, she does. Yeah, she grabs his gun and makes her way to the door that he says he can't open. And
they won't open it.
And they're not opening it. And they're all drawing down on her knees, bringing them down. And figures her only way out is suicide.
Yeah.
And puts the gun to her head and nothing.
Yeah, which FYI, in the French movie, she actually does it like you probably would do it. In the English one, it looks like Bridget Fonda is trying to sip that bullet out like a straw.
It really does,
It bothered me a fucking lot. I'm like, if you're going to off yourself, that's not how you do it, sweetie.
Yeah, and as Bob explains that never leave one in the chamber. And takes the gun, and this is how you do it. And then the next one, shoots her leg. That'll keep her from running for a little while.
I'm glad they kept that in the American one. That's a good moment.
It's a good scene, and it's a hard-learned lesson for the character. So that, this isn't day camp.
Yeah. And I think at the same time, he's establishing, like, where he is in the hierarchy of things, but it also kind of distances himself from her a bit. Like, I like that idea.
It's like, well, because he does. He plays the nice guy with her, the fatherly figure, but he's basically saying, like, I will spank you for this.
Yeah.
Your options are death or this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's perfectly willing to punish her when she steps out of line.
Yeah. And man, the way he delivers lessons, it's pretty intense. And then we get the training montage with the computer and the martial arts.
Yeah.
Which is a funny scene. Okay, try to slap my face.
Well, no, he says try to hit me in the face. He's not expecting a slap.
He's not expecting
a slap. Which is hilarious.
Which, in the American one, bothered me that she just went for the straight-on punch. Mm-hmm. And which, in a way, actually made me laugh a little bit more, but the slap was more surprising.
Yeah,
the slap was definitely more surprising. I think it was the instructor looked more surprised as well, because she didn't do any of the dancing around. He got all in his position, and she just stepped forward and slapped him. Like there was no precursor. It was just whap. Here you go. You asked me to hit you. I did.
Yeah. And he was probably all expecting, is like, well, she's right-handed. I'm going to be expecting something with the right hand. Nope. Left hand around. And he wasn't expecting a slap at all. He's expecting a punch to the face or an attempt at a punch or something like that.
Yeah. There's something that, even though it's, I thought the punch was funnier, it seemed a little more unrealistic and ridiculous in Point of No Return. I'm like, there was something about the simplicity of, and the almost like, well, this is what you wanted, but I'm going to do it my way kind of thing. Yeah. She still hasn't slipped into their way of thinking.
Yeah.
And
I think that carries through in Point of No Return, though. I think it's just they handled it differently. They handled it with a little bit of with that little bit of humor, with the dancing around and all that stuff, which kind of replaced the dancing that they left out after the scene where she bites him.
Yeah.
Right, because that made me laugh in the original, was with the little dance, right?
See, so I thought...
kind of combined those two scenes into that one scene, right?
See, the slap made me laugh. I liked it because it was like going, okay, yeah, she's not thinking the way they're thinking. It's hilarious. And you can see why he's amused by it. Because he's like, she just owned that guy, just out of nowhere.
Yeah, and it, I mean, like I said, it does play really well in the original, that particular part of the movie. But I think it plays well in both, just in a different way.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're quite a ways into this already. I'm going to run that trailer before we continue on talking about this, and we'll be right back.
When I was just a little girl, I asked my mother, what will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich? Here's what she said to me.
Defendant is hereby sentenced to life imprisonment. There is no question of review for parole for 30 years.
Officially, you're deceased as of Monday at 6 o'clock. Let's just say I work for the government, and they decided to give you a new chance to make amends. A rebirth. You'll be starting all over. You'll be taught reading, smiling, speaking, walking, even how to fight.
Okay, now, I think that was a fan trailer that was made. Yeah. It was the only one I could find with English dub anything, and I think it did a fairly good job of telling us about the movie a bit and the tones of with the music and whatnot. But yeah, I think it was a fan-made trailer, but all the overdub was accurate, so that's why I went with it rather than running a legit French one that nobody except for our French audience can understand.
True.
Which is like two people.
Yes.
As far as we know.
As far as I know. There might be more.
I guess, we don't know. I assume a bunch of people in Canada can speak French. I am not one of them.
Yeah. Well, it's like sometimes I watch these movies and I'm like going, damn it, this is why I need to learn another language. So in case I have trouble finding the movie, I can watch the French version and be fine.
Now, we were at the training sequence, and somewhere, I think it's when she meets the lady, Amanda. This is the lady that kind of teaches her how to use her femininity to her advantage and teach her to be a woman. And
etiquette.
I don't know what all that means, but all the etiquette and walking around in high heels and putting on makeup and all that sort of stuff. And I think that's where she has a bit of a downturn in her training, and I think in her mind, that's not who she is, and she doesn't feel like she can be that person. And that everything just goes downhill from there. She just doesn't put any effort into anything after that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was a great scene because it showed what a good actress Anne Perelo was. So Perelo, however you say your actual name. Sorry, mm-hmm. Anne. But there's a scene where she says, try to smile. And that's the struggle she had trying to get that smile. And the way her mouth twisted was so eloquent.
Yeah,
it was. That's the best way I can put it. Is it was eloquent. It showed how painful the experience was for her.
Yeah, it's almost like she'd never smiled before.
Yes.
It was just this complete foreign concept to her.
Or it also got to me. There's sort of that pain, like why she's so angry. There's that bit of self hatred, or like going, I have to smile at myself in a mirror. Why would I ever do that?
Yeah,
yeah. So yeah, I think that's a good scene to bring up because I think that talks to that downfall, that setback in her training.
Mm-hmm.
Was when she actually had to look at herself and actually look at herself.
Yeah. Now we haven't talked about movies linearly for a while, but this is kind of one of those movies you kind of have to, just because it's so integral to the growth of the character.
Yeah.
And who she becomes. Now they make great importance of her birthday because that marks the passage of time for her, as well as the sets.
Yes.
And how the set changes in her room. This stark white room as things start slowly adding into her room and start looking a little normal. And then when she starts acting out, all this graffiti in the room.
Yeah. Now, how'd she get her hands on spray paint?
I asked myself the same question. And I'm like, it's movie land. I'm not going to question it too much.
But at least her graffiti looks like graffiti. In the other one, it just looks like scribbles. Have you ever seen graffiti before? Have you ever been in a bathroom in a shitty neighborhood?
Have you ever been in a bathroom just anywhere?
Just baffling. Like, I put in a return of, like, looked how shitty the graffiti actually looked. Like, they didn't even try. This is just random scribbles with spray paint on the walls and on the television, where there was seemed to be purpose to the graffiti in the French film.
Yes. It was something she was doing to express herself in the French film, but I think what they misunderstood about that in the American one was they're like going, oh, she's just doing graffiti to act out.
Mm-hmm.
No, the kind of part of it is she's like going, yeah, I'm going to do this because I'm still an individual and you don't define me. And I'm still free in the ways that I can be free.
Well, I think that identifies with one of the glaring differences between American films and anything not American. Is American films are, we're telling you the story through the actors and what they're doing. We're not telling you the story through your backgrounds or through other means. It's always comes from the actor. It very rarely comes from the sets or the visuals. I mean, there are directors who are doing it. Certainly the director who directed Birdman and The Revenant, very good at using his
Alejandro.
His scenery as a character.
Well, right? And Grand Budapest Hotel, who does that one?
Oh, that was Wes Anderson.
Wes Anderson does a ton. Wes Anderson creates a world.
Yeah, his sets or characters in and of themselves.
Yeah, and that's very unusual for an American director,
mm-hmm.
which is nice to see.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's definitely one of the biggest differences between.
Well, because it says
Guillermo del Toro. Yeah. He does a lot.
Again, not American.
Though. Yeah,
right.
True.
Yeah. Right.
And yeah, just that attention to detail, like because we see those changes happening, we see time passing as well. Like it's important in the narrative, and it makes that passage of time happen in more than just the dialogue pushing it forward.
Yeah,
exactly.
Which is mainly what the component in the American one is. Like we actually see change in the sets from that time.
Mm-hmm.
Like she's barely, I think, 18 when she gets arrested.
She turns 20, 20. In it was her 20th birthday while she's in training. That was the, during yeah. that birthday scene.
Right. And by the time she graduates, 23. It's her 23rd, which is a much larger period of time than I think the 6 months that Point of No Return.
Because yeah, they speak directly to that. You've got 6 months.
Yeah, right? Which was funny because when she was acting out and Bob goes to the boss for a meeting, he's basically saying she's got 2 weeks. Or
but it's 2 weeks to show a change.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's all they want.
Yeah, and not to become, but just 2 weeks. And whereas the Point of No Returns, it was like, you got 6 months.
If you, 6 months you
wash,
total.
Yeah, wash out, you wash out. Yeah.
Which is ridiculous. Just
bullet in the brain. Like, they're pretty
and
blunt about it.
Nikita, she'd already been there 6 months when she was given the 2 week ultimatum.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he makes mention of it that there's like sometimes it does take like 6-7 years to make a workable agent.
Yeah.
And she's only been there like 3. And so the passage of time for this makes more sense for what they want to create. Yeah. As an agent, somebody who's computer literate, somebody who knows more than one language, somebody who knows a lot about like all the guns, the hardware, what they need to know about everything. That's realistic. In Point of No Return, I'm like, 6 months? No. 6 months, she's not learning all that. She's trying to smash a mouse when she first sees it. And you're telling me 6 months later she knows anything about computers?
Well, you know, and that ultimatum obviously does something because somewhere processes are that, you know, like, well, maybe I do want to live. Like, like I can't.
Survival.
Yeah, this is it. This is what I've got.
Well, I think it's...
If she wants to see... Because, you know, her first birthday in there, she wants to leave and go outside as the present, which, no, doesn't happen. In fact, that's where the ultimatum is delivered in that birthday. Bob delivers the cake, and, okay, here's the good news. Here's the bad news.
But do you think
he always does that. He gives you something good before he gives you the bad thing.
It's definitely a pattern throughout the movie, and I think that
the sweet before the
that does carry through all events and contributes to her change in attitude as time progresses as well. Yeah. Is there's always one hand giving and one hand taking.
Yeah,
right. And she gets tired of it.
She
eventually yes.
Even more so in the French one.
Way more so in the French one.
It's so impactful.
But do you think maybe at the beginning when he brings her her birthday cake on her 20th birthday, do you think that might have had a part of like part of her decision, like to like I've got to really straighten up and fly right? Like, I mean, those little acts of kindness sort of create that, was it that Stockholm syndrome? Like she's on board.
Yeah.
I think that was part of it. I think that but you know, she was so angry after he gave her the ultimatum. It's like she has that fit right afterwards, right? Mm-hmm. She throws the cake and all that stuff. So I don't think that the act of kindness in that particular scene carried through to her. I think she missed the act of kindness in that one or at that point. But I think that you're right that act of kindness, those small acts of kindness throughout the rest of her training definitely contributed to that.
Yeah.
It established that pattern again for him.
Yeah. So she goes to Amanda, like, this is the person that's going to help me through this, and and does. Skip 3 years later, and it's her birthday again.
Yeah.
And she gets the traditional, what we figure has happened for the past 3 years now, is she gets the little dining table with the candles and stuff as part of her birthday present, and she's told, no, they're leaving. I think at this point she's a little scared to leave because she's been there for so long. And it's a neat, just those neat little reactions, right?
Yeah, there's actual disbelief.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, I can't believe that I get to get out of here and go out. But you're right, there's also that small element of fear there.
It's suspicion,
like,
too.
Yeah.
She's like, what, this isn't quite right. And it's not until like she sits down within the restaurant that she starts to sort of let her guard down, which of course is the exact wrong time to.
Yeah, it was a mistake for sure. She was right to keep her guard up, but...
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, they get to the restaurant, which I think is in this weird French cathedral, because my God, French, it looked like it was this massive church thing. It just was so ornate.
Some French buildings are beautiful. Like, I love that restaurant. Like, I love this restaurant scene. I prefer this one. I just enjoy it more. There's just more...
It felt like they found like the nicest building and then put a set in it. Because it just didn't feel legit to me. I'm like, my God, like, does this actually exist in the world? Yeah. It was almost too ornate for me. But
sometimes you're drinking coffee amongst the most beautiful things. Like, it's amazing. Yeah. Paris is beautiful.
It is. It's quite something. I'm like, wow, Jesus, I need to fucking travel. At least in Point of No Return, it looked like a damn restaurant.
Well, I think the other thing about it, too, is like, what I also liked about this movie is like, you're looking at like Paris, and it's beautiful. And it's just, it's a lovely city to have a movie in. Yeah. The other one, she's in like Washington and like Venice Beach. I don't care about those places.
Oh, I liked the Venice Beach though. I liked the way that they tied Venice from the first movie into the second movie by sending her to Venice Beach.
Oh, yeah, true.
Right? I'm like, okay, nice touch, right? Because they instead of going to Venice Beach, they go elsewhere. But we won't talk about that yet.
I just skip around. Paris is just a better setting. Just a better setting.
Yeah. Okay, so this is probably the most pivotal scene in the film. Mm-hmm. She's given another present, and she's about to open it, and of course the waiter comes up. No, hold off a second. And while the waiter's there, she's just hugging it like it's the most important thing in the world to her.
Yeah.
Almost overdoes it a bit, I think. Might be the only scene where I think she kind of overdoes it, but the preciousness of this moment for her, it's so important for her. And then, you know, waiter leaves, she opens it up, and here's your gun, and go kill.
Yeah, go kill that guy up there.
Yeah, there's three people up there, make sure the target gets two, minimum, and gives her directions, go to the bathroom, there's a window there, and there's a car waiting for her outside, which is a total lie.
Oh, yes. Completely.
And this leads into the only true action scene in this movie.
You're right.
Yeah.
Sounds like it. I mean, this movie feels like it should be a big bombastic action movie. It's really not.
It's really not. It's very subtle.
Yeah, it's a very subtle dramatic piece.
But to be fair, I think that's probably the whole point of it, is like going like, you like to think spies, it's all Bond action, 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 action. It's not. No. It's, some of it's just kind of just crap that gets done all the time.
Yeah. There's another scene later on in another hotel restaurant that speaks to that very, very well.
Yeah.
Right. And we'll let till we get there. But okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we need to pick up the pace here.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Well, pick it up then.
Okay. So, she does the job, and lots of shooting in restaurants and things like that, which might be a little sensitive for Paris viewers at this point. So you might not want to watch that movie right now.
Probably a good point.
Just saying.
And don't forget grenade launchers.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of...
Lots of explosions.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool scene. And she gets to the bathroom and opens up the window, and it's a brick wall.
Of course.
Of course. Another chase down past the cooks, and some great shootout stuff. I love that kitchen scene where she's just ducked behind the counter, and she's such a great shot. She's shooting through walls and things like that.
Well, they do make mention that it's a titanium bullet that she has. So like, when she knows that guy's behind there, she's like, I just have to knock it up enough to like... knock him out.
Yeah.
She's strategic.
Yeah, she's very strategic in her shooting. And manages to get her way through the back of the restaurant and...
down the garbage chute.
Both movies.
This is what pissed me off. In the American one, it's a laundry chute in the kitchen.
I was going to mention that too. Yeah, because
it's bullshit. Yeah. Oh, she wanted to land in towels. That's what I'm guessing. That's what happened.
Oh, okay.
She didn't want to land in
the actress didn't want to land in fake garbage. Yeah. They wanted to land in fluffy white towels.
Yeah. I mean, it's nitpicking, but that's what we do here is nitpick, right?
Yeah. But I mean, like, that's a decent nitpick.
It is. It is. I mean, because it's
valid.
Definitely shows it how tough Nikita was, right? She's like, she just got up and kept moving, even though she's covered in garbage. Her nylons are torn.
She's bleeding.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's far
more all Bridget Fonda is wet.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
And she doesn't have a run in her tights, which I'm sorry. If you're walking halfway through Washington, you're not going to... those tights are going to be fucked.
Well, you know, at least Bridget Fonda took off her shoes.
True.
That is true.
I did appreciate that scene, actually.
Yeah.
Where she takes off her shoes. So, yeah, she gets back, manages to get back to the facility. And, there's a bit of a confrontation with Bob.
Well, confrontation to get in.
Yeah, just even to get in. But she finally gets in and...
it's like they didn't expect her.
Yeah, this confrontation with Bob, and, you said this and this and this, and it wasn't there. And he goes, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I know. That was part of the test. It was survival.
Yeah.
Can you, you know, survive?
Can you think on your feet when things don't work out exactly the way they're supposed to?
Yeah. Slapping and yelling. And then she kisses him saying, this is the last time I'm ever kissing you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was.
But as far as we know.
Yeah.
That's when I first noticed the room as well. Like, it's a lovely, lovely room now that she has it all done up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was, again, her changing her attitude as well.
It was beautiful. I was like, I could live there.
Yeah. It was a nice, by the time they fixed it up, it was a very nice,
beautiful, wardrobe, old ladies' room.
Yeah.
Now, I did want to mention, like, they spent all this time turning her into a very proper lady, all the rules of etiquette and so on. And as you move through the movie, you realize that she never used any of those skills. That she learned, right? Like she didn't revert back to being the savage girl that she was, but she didn't quite reach the middle ground either. She was still like, there's scenes in there where she's still
wild,
a little wild.
Yeah. Well, when they say, okay, she passed the test and she gets let out into the world. This is really the first time she's existed in the world, not as a drug addict or anything else, and learning how to do all this stuff for the first time. Like when she's shopping, she just
love that scene.
Seeing so
both movies.
Point of no return, it's one woman. In the French one, it's a couple of different women. But
which makes
she
sense.
Would just grab whatever they were grabbing because that's what women eat, apparently.
Yeah, in quantity.
It was just like...
But I love how it's like they taught her all this stuff, but completely forgot regular life skills are probably something she's going to need.
Yeah. You know, so they gave her some money and stuff, and she gets a place and an apartment.
Like, I don't even think she knows how to do laundry.
And the first guy she meets is Marco, who is a grocer. He's a clerk, and she's just shoveling this stuff out of the checkout, and
she's throwing it,
and he's totally flirting with her, and she's like, okay, sex is something I haven't done yet either.
Yeah.
Invite him over for dinner and the whole thing, and she's just devouring the world as fast as she can because it might be taking her from any moment.
Exactly, and that's a very good way of putting it is, she knows that she could be taken out of the world at any time.
For sure.
And she is, you're right, devouring every experience that she can.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's so important. And it was just the most normal of a person. Like, how more normal can a grocery clerk be?
Yeah.
Who doesn't seem to have a lot of drive or anything else. I think that's part of his character that develops as well. I mean, he doesn't get as much time on the camera, but there is a certain amount of simplicity to that. Like, of course, she doesn't want that confrontational character that JP is in the remake. There's that certain passiveness about the character that makes kind of sense to be with somebody who's going to be called at any moment to do all sorts of crazy stuff.
And there's also like a sweetness. There's a sweetness to it. Like, he's not coming on too strong. He's not. It seems to me like in the American remake, they're on a different footing. Like, they like to establish him as having more than she is. And in Nikita, it's different.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't have a lot of the social stuff, like knowing how to shop, how to do things, but she's still a very powerful character.
Yeah.
And he knows about the world, but like he's kind of happy to like spend time with this girl. Like, he's not, there's something more romantic about it.
That's a good way of putting it. There's something more romantic about it. I beg to differ that JP was more aggressive than Marco, because they're...
But he's got more drive, I think, than Marco.
I think, he's
a photographer on the side, and he's he's renting
But Marco's
these
a boat builder on the side.
That's something he's moving towards.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're both those artistic personalities.
Yeah.
But I think that the way they were handled, Marco played a very much more passive-aggressive, right? Like,
well, no, JP was super passive-aggressive.
And he was generally aggressive.
He's somebody who's like, I like this girl, but goddammit, why won't she behave way I want?
I think Marco's more passive and curious than JP, who's...
And he accepts her more as this crazy person that he likes, whereas JP's like, oh, I like this girl, but goddammit, I need to change some things.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm going to say this because...
Dumb.
Because I didn't see that, and I think that the hate that you guys had on for this particular actor from Runaway Bride has carried into this movie, and I think that your feelings were a little bit colored.
Not
I do,
really.
Because I agree that he was more aggressive than Marco, but I don't think he was as aggressive as you're making him out to be.
Mm. I disagree. I think because he gets really pissy all the time, off on a dime.
Twice he got pissy.
Oh, he gets pissy very often. Oh, why won't you tell me anything? Why won't you talk to me? Why? And then,
but Marco did all those same things. He did. There,
but
those
here's
were
the
note
thing.
For I'll note,
bring,
but
Marco, Marco backs down off of them. He kind of just understands, like, where
he's
JP
allowing her
more.
Her secrets. But yeah. JP's like, well, if you got to tell me something. You got to do something. Like, he's very aggressive on, like, I need you to give me something.
Yeah, they Americanized him.
Yeah.
Yeah, but right? You mean that makes him a lot more aggressive.
As I said, he is a little bit more aggressive, but I don't think that he... I think that you're...
And less accepting of who she is as a person.
We'll agree to disagree, because I don't think that that was there, but...
I do.
Yeah. Well, and that's the beauty of having opinions, is everybody gets one.
But, but part of it, I think, is what they did in the French one versus the American one, and this is what I think kind of, like, establishes it, is I'm going to skip ahead to the Venice trip, where she's doing the hit. In the French one,
yeah.
She's actually talking to him
while she's doing it. Yeah, the Venice trip is, again, perpetuated by Bob, who's posing as her uncle Bob. And tells this touching story to help say, hey, yeah, she's been keeping all these secrets. So he makes up this elaborate and touching story about her childhood that never really happened. And in some cases, I think she wishes it had happened because it was such a cool story.
Yeah.
And then gives them this trip to Venice, and much like Bob's always is, with everything good he does for you, there's something bad. So... this is setting up another hit. Although we did glaze over her first assignment when she's out. She delivers
to the hotel.
Yeah, the morning after the first date, essentially, she's called to do this thing at a hotel. And all she has to do is deliver this tray of food, which is just bugged to like crazy, to this room. And then she gets to go home. In Point of No Return, they had to jazz that one up a little bit. And
with a full explosion.
With a full explosion and the whole room blown up.
The whole floor blown up.
Yeah, that was crazy. And I'm like, woo, a little over the top. But with the American one doing that, it kind of pushes her character closer to where she wants to be earlier at the end of the movie, where she just wants out. Like, that's where her doubts are already start creeping in. Like, I don't really want to be this person.
Yeah, and the French one, not so much right there.
Yeah,
no, because it was a while. Harmless.
Yeah, in fact, she's ecstatic about the end of the day. She's like, I have the best job in the world.
Yeah, and she's talking to Bob, and she's like, oh yeah, I'm engaged now. Like, yeah. she invites him over.
Yeah,
and I think this speaks to the problem that you have with JP as well in the Venice New Orleans scene. Is they're engaged before they go to Venice, but in New Orleans, he's actually proposing through the door, which was really freaking dumb.
It's stupid. Like, and
that was horrible.
She's not talking to him, but he's getting more and more irritated. Like, why aren't you talking to me? Blah, blah, blah. Well, I've said something amazing. Blah, blah, blah.
As a guy, if I had to propose to somebody that didn't respond at all, they didn't say a word, I'd probably get irritated too.
Yeah, well, then don't do it through a door.
And that's why it was dumb.
This is actually where the movie starts to deviate a bit. So I think this is a good place to run the Point of No Return trailer.
Having been found guilty of the crime of murder, it is the judgment of this court that you be sentenced to die. And may God have mercy on your soul.
The government gave her a choice. Death or life.
We've decided to give you another chance.
As an assassin.
We need a young female operative. I think she's the one.
What are we gonna do?
Girl number five, take out the bad guys. Do not shoot the good guys.
What do you do when you're most uncomfortable?
Okay, come on, hit me.
My hip.
I want immediate improvement if she gets a blow in the brain.
You might want to try smiling. Why are you so serious?
You mentioned the word bullet and you mentioned the word brain. You hearing me?
Your name is Claudia Dorn. You live in Venice, California.
Where are you from?
It's not a trick question.
Chicago.
And your code name is Nina.
Hello?
Nina. 1 hour.
There are three people sitting behind you on the balcony.
I don't understand.
Bullets in the VIP.
Once she took their deal, she passed the point of no return.
How are you?
Just blew up a hotel. How the hell do you think I am?
You like living with a ghost.
In a minute.
You never tell me anything.
A while ago, I did something really bad. I'm always going to be paying for it.
When they
They gave her a new life.
I know you like that you made me into something different.
Please, Bob, let me go.
They never thought she'd want to leave it.
If you pull this job off of me, I'll see what I can do to help.
Bridget Fonda. Point of no return.
Okay, that was Point of No Return trailer and had some of the key stuff we were heading towards there. Yeah. So we were at Venice or New Orleans, depending on which movie we're in at the moment. Yeah. And this is the trip that Bob rewards them with.
Rewards slash punishes.
Their relationship, yeah. And, you know, she gets in the room and they've already gone through town, and she, again, very exuberant about the place she's in.
Yeah. Can we talk about the trip through town really briefly?
Sure.
Because there's a big difference there.
Yeah, there is a very big
Venice,
difference.
It's very romantic and fun and...
It's just the two of them.
It's a bit scary in New Orleans.
It is. Yeah. And then, of course, there's the mugging.
Mardi Gras.
The mugging is really important because this is where clearly... delineates the lines between the two movies.
Yes.
Right? The explosion starts it, but this fight scene where she kicks the shit out of both of those muggers.
Yeah.
And when does the bell go off for him?
Yeah, it doesn't at all.
No, it's so weird. And she just says, oh, I took a self-defense
class at some point.
At some point. She doesn't even have a date in mind. Like, she's just, the one thing that they didn't teach her is how to lie.
Yeah. And this is where the movies change from Nikita being a character study that happens to be an action film.
Yeah.
And Point of No Return, which is an action movie that happens to have a little bit of a character study in it.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right. That's the best way I can put it.
That is perfect. That's what I feel. Because, like the American one, a lot of explosions, a lot of boom, boom. Yeah, that's more action movie. Yeah, you're completely right.
They just had to throw that little extra in there to another action beat.
Yeah.
But it changes everything so much at that point. Like another thing that they're hiding, and it pushes that relationship a little further, that separation between JP and his normal life and her, the one she's hiding and consistently hiding about herself, is here's another question.
Yeah. What I found, actually, I didn't mention this before, the difference between the two covers that they have. In the American one, Point of No Return, she's like a computer specialist. Which, again, no way.
She's smashing the mouse on the table during that.
But the one they have in Nikita, she's like she works at a hospital and she's a nurse. And you could have somebody on call all the time. And when you mysteriously disappear, nobody's going to say anything.
And it made sense. Yeah.
Yeah, it did play really well.
It's a beautiful cover.
Yeah, it was a great cover.
Yeah, well, the later scene when they're covering it as a night job.
You're doing the night shift.
Night project.
So good.
It was easy. Although, at some point, I did question myself with the thing. Well, he never tried to visit her at the hospital.
Yeah, there's a lot of things you have to take for granted in both these movies.
For sure. Right?
Like any movie, I mean, every movie's intent is to entertain, and you are supposed to suspend your...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, because there's so much going on, like, it was... Even when I'm watching it, I'm like, I can see why they did two TV shows about this, because there's so much more to expand on in these in-between moments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the developing normal relationship while hiding this. I mean, there's so much more you can do, and that's lends itself to television so well.
It really does.
Yeah.
And this is actually, you were talking about the way the rooms change that to cover the passage of time. Mm-hmm. There's another way that they do this in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Her hair.
Yeah.
Her hair changes so frequently, and I we were talking last time I was on about attention to detail that John Carpenter has, and Luc Besson has that same attention to detail, right? Mm-hmm. Because it gave you that sense of the passage of time, is because her hair was so different.
Yeah,
and I can't say the same for Bridget Fonda. They just dye her hair and back to what her normal hair color would be. That's about it, really. I can say the director John Bottom just doesn't have that same attention to detail, despite the fact that he's got some good creds under his belt as well, Short Circuit, Saturday Night Fever, and War Games.
Although,
I think it goes to audience.
Yeah.
I really do. I think that European directors, again, they understand their audiences are looking at everything that they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
American audiences, they want to see the explosions. They want to see the naked breasts. They want to...
That's why it's called an auteur before anything else.
Right. Well, and you looked at John's body of work there, too, and they were more of those kind of crowd-pleaser kind of movies.
Yeah, I mean, this is the era of the blockbuster,
right?
Yeah.
Like, this is when everybody was looking for that next
big. And Hollywood does have this assume your audience is dumb.
Yeah. Thing,
which I just, no, your audience has never been dumb.
Well, and it's also, to be fair too, it's kind of like the character thing. Like, well, how will I know this character is this character if they don't look the same all the time?
Yeah, which bafflingly, like, wait, is that the same actress? Did you just put on a wig? I don't know who she is. All white people look the same.
Yeah.
And oh my God, she's got glasses. She's hideous. Oh wait, she's taking them off. She's gorgeous.
Yes, there's a lot of that. I am pleased to say that we're seeing a move away from that. I mean, you've got the Christopher Nolans. You've got Iñárritu. I think it's his name. Alejandro.
You've got the Wes Andersons.
Wes Andersons. So there's a lot of really...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I hate to say it this way, but a lot of smart directors out there who are not assuming their audience is stupid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. You get such much more satisfying movie. Yeah.
Yes.
I do think, and Paralad definitely goes through a lot more stages. Like, she does kind of look gritty and ugly at the start of this movie.
Yeah.
And then Bridget Fonda, she looks cute pretty much all the time.
You know, they tried.
They
really did try. I mean, they did the teeth. Like, I love that, again, that detail in both of them. Like, her teeth are snaggly and yellow and just look
so dirty.
Gross.
That was my big question when I was watching him, like going, okay, so you're doing a movie and part of the makeup is to make your teeth look awful. Like,
yeah, well,
is that disgusting? What do they do?
You can tell when Bridget Fonda, you can tell that they're prosthetics.
Yeah.
Because there's one scene, and my wife pointed this out. She says, she looks like she's wearing braces.
Mm.
Right? So she's wearing a prosthetic over her regular teeth. I think with the French version, I think they did makeup on her teeth.
And that would stand out more for somebody who already talks through her teeth. So
Yeah.
And you'll notice it more.
Yeah, and I mean, Anne Perillo doesn't have very good teeth, whereas Bridget Fonda has Hollywood movie star
Hollywood teeth.
Yeah.
Right? European stereotypes.
What I like to call cow teeth.
It's true. That speaks to a whole different thing that we don't even want to talk about right now about
she has the chiclets.
Yeah. About European attitudes versus North American attitudes towards beauty. But that's not...
And this moment in the podcast brought to you by Colgate.
Yes.
Crest White Grips.
7 out of 8 directors recommend La Femme Nikita over Point of No Return.
Okay, so the Venice hit, this is a pretty big moment for her because the hits from this hotel room, like everything's been pre-booked. There's a gun in the bathroom that she has to put together that's hidden in cabinets and stuff.
That was more intriguing.
The New Orleans...
it's quick. It's two pieces.
Well, yeah, but the bathroom was way nicer in New Orleans than the Venice one.
Well, you're looking, again, old world European versus new world American.
Oh, yeah. Right?
And I mean, that's really clear through most of the movie is that difference.
Yeah.
But a very emotional moment because this is supposed to be
romantic.
A romantic getaway for Venice, and this is where he's going to propose in New Orleans in the Point of No Return. So very big moments, and they ordered food, and they're ready to get down, and then the phone call comes in, and her attitude completely changes, and she goes into professional mode.
No, her mood changes. No, I wouldn't say her attitude.
Her mood changes, and knowing the moment's gone now. Like, she has to get her mindset into being the assassin during this really romantic moment. It completely shuts down.
But not just that. I think it's also the realization where she's like, this is what it's like now.
Yeah. So for Marco, he's like, what's wrong? What's going on? And while she's putting together this gun and running the bath to kind of cover what's going on as well. And she even has to grab a towel because there's no way to open the window in both movies, and breaks it so she can point her gun out at her target through this big, long scoped gun thing.
Yeah.
It's a weird looking gun.
It is. I mean, this is clearly, we've already had sort of discussed the difference between these two scenes. But for Marco, he's opening up his heart to her. He's telling her all the things that he needs from her. Right. He's not making accusations. He's opening up, and
But she's responding. She's actually talking back, which makes a difference.
Very monosyllabic, but she is.
But she is talking back.
She is acknowledging that that he's talking,
and
to
that
her.
Makes a huge difference to how that dynamic plays out.
Exactly, and then in Point of No Return,
she's not talking, which is
she's not talking. She doesn't talk to him at all. She just cries.
She should have said something to be like, "Shut the fuck up."
Yeah,
go away.
I mean, it's an emotional scene in both movies, but she's. Yeah, she's not responding to him through the door at all, who's who proposes through a door? You couldn't have waited, done it over.
I
the
know,
line.
You idiot.
But am I right? Like,
yeah, and you know what? They had to squeeze
again.
That
I'm
there,
angry
right?
at him.
Like, yeah. No wonder my best friend's wedding.
You're an idiot.
Nobody wanted you then. We don't want you now.
Yeah, that does color some of my thing. But damn it, yeah, you're an idiot. Yeah, but I don't know. I kind of like the two different ones. I enjoy the hit. Like, I like a hit in New Orleans when it's really busy. That's pretty bold. I like that. But then the other one, it's bold and in broad daylight.
Yeah. Oh, well, and a woman in both.
Yeah, and that was a really nice touch. I hate to say it, but it
oh,
is.
Oh, I get it. Yeah, for sure. Right.
It shows how impartial they really are. It's like, if you've done something that we feel you need to be eliminated for, we're going to do it. We don't care if you're male or
oh, God, yeah. Yeah. Of course.
I mean, we skipped by it, but I wanted to just make a quick mention while I'm thinking about it. Anne Bancroft, when playing Amanda, that Jean Moreau played in Nikita, she comes off a bit scarier.
Yeah.
She does. She's more intense.
Yeah.
And the thing is, both actresses are great matrons of their respective
films. Oh, yeah.
Her character's really important to Maggie / Nikita.
Yeah.
But in the overall scope of things, not big presence in the film per se, but her moments are big while she's there.
So. They make better use of her in Point of No Return.
Yeah, they do actually.
Because she comes back.
They create more of a relationship between those two.
They do. Yeah. So they do make better use of her in the remake.
They do give her more to do, for sure. And if you're getting an Anne Bancroft. But both of them were big actresses in their respective countries. So definitely needed to make a quick nod about it while I was thinking
for
about it. So since we're long past that. Yeah. So that happens. The big hit happens. That's the crisis point between their relationship.
Yeah.
As they come back to home.
Not just their relationship with her and Bob.
Oh, yeah. She wants out after this.
She does want it out after this. And I think that they actually handled that, I don't want to say better, but certainly a lot more openly in Point of No Return. More in Nikita, it's a lot more subtle. Like, you really have to...
Her wanting out is more subtle, and it feels like...
And she never actually says it.
No, she doesn't. It's
Well, again, that's our European versus American take on it.
And this is where, you know, the final acts of this now are very different.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, the structure's similar, you know, in the French one, it's a political thing where she's got to get some papers and
whatnot. Right, yeah, this guy's selling secrets to the Russians or something like that.
Yeah, and
but
it's
she's
a very
also running the
moment.
Show. She is in charge.
She gets to pick her people and everything else.
She's got a 6-month operation. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's a passage of time. 6 months, she's doing this
everything
job.
Feels so immediate in Point of No Return.
Yeah.
It does, even though they mentioned that they have 6 months.
Yeah.
They actually say it in the remake that she has 6 months to make it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. But yeah, like, I mean, and she's more in Nikita, she's the one in charge. Like, she seems more... She's more capable to do it, whereas in Point of No Return, she's dragged along and told what to do.
Point of No Return, it feels like an Ocean's 11 heist or something.
Yeah.
You know, okay, we got to go in here. This guy's heavily guarded. He's got the info we need.
Mm-hmm. But in Nikita, she's just meeting with people.
Yeah, yeah.
And, getting the intel, creating the plan.
Then there's the Russian girlfriend, Olivia Dabo, in Point of No Return.
Who I loved. I'm sorry. You know, She was an extraneous addition to the script, but that they turned into a key character. But she was so much fun.
She was a bit of a cartoon character, but there's something about
her
that I quite
like. She was
the
bimbo girlfriend, but she was more of a very stronger, more proactive character than any of the other ones.
Like a mall from the 40s gangster film. Like she was.
Yeah.
I loved her. She's fun.
Yeah.
But you know, in both films, this is where things go wrong as well. Mm-hmm. Like, the whole point was to do this, and it doesn't go smoothly to get this information, and it becomes a bit of a wet works job.
Yep, with the cleaner.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is where the cleaner comes
in. Both cleaners were amazing, just to say.
Yes.
Oh, for God,
absolutely.
Yes.
And
they're,
it's
like,
funny.
Usual cleaners.
Yeah. Yes. Jean Reno, who plays Victor in this one, and he's the cleaner. He's definitely got more character to him. He's not as flat as Harvey Keitel is.
Yeah.
Although he's very interesting in his own way, because he's this is the proto professional.
Yeah.
Because when Leon was developed, it was developed from this idea of his character in Nikita.
Yeah.
So Luc Besson is like, oh, I can expand on this. And the original developing title for Leon was The Cleaner.
Yeah.
So they're essentially the same character. In fact, he was wearing the same outfit in The
Those
Professional.
Glasses, right?
So, and the toque and the long wool coat.
Yeah.
It's all the same. It's all the same in Leon.
Yeah, that was a good point.
Except for the name.
Yeah. I think that Jean Reno's Victor was a little more unstable.
Oh, yeah.
He
just wants to kill people.
Yeah, he was definitely unstable.
Yeah, I got the feeling he enjoyed
business.
It.
This is my job, and I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And there's no emotion involved whatsoever.
I got the feeling he had some mental issues.
Oh, yeah. Like, he's like a cleaner you call in when you're like going, we're going to just take out everybody because we're pretty sure he's going to do that anyway.
Yeah, I got the feeling he goes home, turns around three times, and flicks the light switch multiple times. Like, he's got this weird obsessive compulsive. He's very proper and tight and
clenched. His intensity.
Which is weird. When I was going into this, like, I'd seen this movie before, but the whole time I was in my head, I'm like, oh, this scene isn't playing out the way I remember. And I'm like, oh, shit, he was a cleaner in Pulp Fiction as well.
Yeah.
And that's the scene I was remembering, a very similar scene. Yeah. And I'm like, god damn, I bet you that's where Tarantino got this moment. Like,
for sure.
He wanted to have that Nikita moment. It is a very similar scene.
Oh, but can I say, like, when they do the exact same thing where he's got acid, where he's trying to get rid of, aka their problem, which is the bodies. One of them is not dead. In the French one, that guy is struggling for a while. Like, it's upsetting.
It's disturbing. They're holding him down in the French
in both movies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But the second one, she didn't struggle as much.
Because they were both drugged.
One, he's going for a while.
Yeah. They're all freaking out about the job going wrong. They forget to mention the cleaner that one's not dead.
Yeah.
We just knocked him out.
Yeah, exactly. Well, in Point of Return, she shoots her, remember, to put her out of her misery.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, and in the other one, no.
They just hold him down until he stops squirming.
This is where I actually saw Nikita was overacting. That screaming and crying.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that actually took me out. I mean, to use one of Jeff's terms, it actually took me out of the movie.
Yeah.
It was overdone, and it seemed out of character, even for somebody who was becoming disillusioned with the job she was doing.
Yeah.
Like,
I couldn't understand why it was happening either. Yeah, like, at that time, right. She was together for 6 months putting this together.
Well, yeah. And the person that she was doing the job with, Nikita, just, I'm out. Well, actually, both movies. Yep. Like, the key person that's supposed to be moving this job forward is just out. They're undressing or whatever, out of their disguise and the whole bit, and the cleaner just whacks them.
Yeah.
Well, in Nikita... The guy gets a shot at the cleaner before the cleaner takes him out.
Yeah,
well, Jean Reno. Yeah, he's
he's already been shot.
Just shot at me.
But yeah, and I mean, I love that line in Point of Return where she says, "The little things never bothered me," or whatever.
That's actually a good addition.
That worked really well. That particular scene
that calms Keitel down.
Yeah. Yeah, it was handled way better in Point of Return.
For sure.
Just saying.
Yeah, that particular moment, for sure. I think overall, like, the job in the French version is just a better moment.
Yes.
Because before the job, she's in Point of No Return, she's going to Bob and, like, you got to get me out. You got to do whatever you can to get me out. She didn't do any of that in Nikita.
Yeah.
I like the subtlety of her just disappearing.
Yeah, and there's no, you don't.
Although
see
I don't like the fact that Marco figures all this stuff out about her off camera.
Yeah, it felt like something was cut out because it was a long movie.
Yeah.
Right? So they had to cut something out.
Yeah, so it makes me wonder if that it was on the chopping room floor, but he figures all this stuff out that she's been on surveillance jobs and everything else.
Well, I wonder, I don't know. To
JP
me,
never figures, I don't think he's ever told.
No.
No, and he had more reason to wonder because of the mugging and some of these other skills that she has that...
He sees her in action, essentially.
Yeah.
Whereas in Nikita, he does not.
Yeah, so so it would have made more sense to carry that through in Point of No Return, but they never do. So another difference where it shouldn't have been different.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I'd like to see a marriage between the two kind of at that end where, like, you have the one, on the one hand... the guy figures it out, but on the other hand, she doesn't lose it at the critical moment. Like, I want both those moments to happen in the same movie.
Exactly, yeah. Yes.
Like, and in Point of No Return, Kaufman, who I should make a note that was Miguel Ferrer from RoboCop and The Stand and Twin Peaks and all that. And he's got a little more, he doesn't have that old man attitude from the Nikita, but he's the one running the show, and he basically says, well, this job's been botched, and after she finishes the job, but yeah, that's the cleaner's job, is to take her out after the job's finished in Point of No Return. Whereas the other one, it's Jean Reno's job to help her complete the job, and he gets shot multiple times. He's a tough dude.
A lot.
He gets shot a lot, and as they're escaping, they lock the gate of the embassy, and rather than drive through the gate, he drives through a brick wall, which I thought was baffling, because that car was spotless, unmarked. Yeah. It was the toughest damn car I have ever seen.
It is an embassy car, so it would be armored, but really, you're right, there's no way it would have gone through.
No, and then he dies shortly after. He just manages to get them away.
I think there's like a movie where somebody's like trying that like running at the gate thing, and it does what it probably should happen, whereas the gate wins. So I think in this movie, they've shown that the gate will win, so you might as well go through the bricks.
Now, in true American fashion, we got to up the ante in the final scene and give Bob more to do. So he's trying to come to the rescue, because now he knows that she's going to get whacked after the job.
Yeah.
And there's this big fight between the cleaner and Nikita as the car kind of is careening over a cliff. Like, it's teetering.
Yeah, she knows she's next.
Yeah. And it's a cool scene, but I feel like it's a bit unnecessary. I kind of liked how she just leaves everything that she needs to leave for the job to be completed and disappears.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In the French one, where there's a little bit more happening, and Bob has to basically make the choice to let her go.
Yeah.
And I like the choice for the first time, her having the choice and not giving it to him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, the end was almost exactly the same. I mean, realistically, aside from Marco's revelation that he knows that she's doing some sort of government work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think he knew that she did wet work.
No.
He knew it was something. He probably didn't want all the details, because being how passive he was, but...
Or he didn't want to think of her that way.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, otherwise, it's like there was the same discussion in both movies is... Mm-hmm. She left you this, now leave her alone. Oh, by the way, I tore up the note that she wrote you.
Yeah. Yeah, but they're basically the same, although JP seems to be a lot more arrogant, aggressive about it.
He does. I mean,
whereas Marco and
Bob are commiserating a little bit in...
Yeah, that they're both going to miss her.
Yeah. I mean, that's the best end line, I think.
It's sad but bitter.
Ever, is just when Bob, that's the last line of the movie, is, I think we're both going to miss her.
Yeah, they both, you know, they realize that there's been a lot of lies happening, but... At the end of the day, they both have this weird unconditional love, either in a parental way or you know, a spouse kind of way.
Yeah, I don't know. Or like, there's a pervy way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and then...
I'm your mentor, but I still want to bang you.
In the Point of No Return, it's more of a love triangle kind of thing. Yeah. And that final scene, there's no real moment of, we all feel the same way about her. It's just kind of... mutual aggression towards each other. Let's agree we don't like each other and get the fuck out of my house.
Yeah, pretty much.
No,
there certainly was an animosity between those two characters that wasn't present in Nikita.
No.
Except for at the end, there was a certain amount of it from Marco towards Bob, and mostly because he knew that Bob was her boss. I don't think it had anything to do with romantic feelings. It was simply, you're the one responsible for her leaving me because... You were the one who was giving her these jobs.
Yeah. I think he blamed Bob.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there was the neat addition to Bridget Fonda's version with Nina Simone. There's this constant reference to her music and how it made her feel. It was, I think, a connection to old and current life. And that was the one thing Bob took, was a Nina Simone album when he left, because it was the one thing he knew about her. Both of them did, really. It's the one thing they both mutually knew about her, was this love for this musician.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was almost her defining characteristic for both of them.
Yeah.
Is this love for that particular artist.
Yeah. Now, I do want to speak more about music, because the music in this, in La Femme Nikita, it didn't stand out to me as much as it did in Point of No Return, which is interesting because it's the same music. The original score was turned down for Point of No Return that was written, and they just wound up using La Femme Nikita's music and just amped it up. Like, it wasn't changed, it was just louder.
Oh.
And suddenly I noticed it, and I'm like, oh, I don't like this. Or it just, because it's a score for a different movie, even though it's the same plot, it feels so much more in your face. And when you're doing a score, it should be there, but it shouldn't be super noticeable either at the same time. It's to manipulate your mood while you're watching a film. And if it's standing out so much and glaringly so that and it doesn't seem to match properly, then maybe you're misusing the music.
Maybe it's because it's amped up, because like it's the audio explosion that they added. They added a lot more explosions. They added a lot more audio explosions.
And why are saxophones always the sad instrument? Whenever somebody's sad or walking through the rain, there's a saxophone.
Oh, there's always they're also the sexy instrument. Late 80s and 90s, saxophone was like, people are going to bang, like, as soon as you hear it.
Yeah, the saxophone just seemed to be like the instrument of choice in the late 80s, early 90s. It's like, everything has to have a saxophone in it.
Yeah, that's
right.
True.
Right. Yeah, and then like that twangy guitar, like that.
Now, interestingly, I found out Point of No Return was filmed in sequence, which is kind of rare.
Yeah.
You know, for a film, especially entirety. Like, with La Femme Nikita, the first scene that was shot was that opening scene. But that was just happenstance. Whereas Point of No Return, the whole thing was filmed in sequence. And that's kind of rare.
Yeah.
And I'm not... I'm not sure if it's... I can't see the necessity for it, honestly.
I see the only necessity, like, within the context of this film, that you might shoot a block of it in sequence. I don't know even if in sequence would make sense, but like all together was just because you're using that training area, you only have it booked for so long, so you have to shoot all your scenes in
there. That's just it. If you're going back, you know, shoot all your that area, and then you go shoot the hotel scenes and her house scenes. I like in we totally glazed over when she first got her first apartment, she both places she found something really shitty, but
She does it up.
The French one, it's a shitty apartment in a shitty neighborhood. In the American one, it is this beachfront apartment that is this is great, great view and stuff. And that's what sells it. The place is just trashed. But it's part of her character was to find the normalcy and rebuild that as a project.
Yeah, they make mention of urine in the Point of No Return. Is that urine?
Yeah, she says that's not urine. There's a stain on the carpet. Yeah.
Why do you need to say that?
Which is also her first meeting with JP, which is
That's funny though. Like, that's not urine. I'm like, you know, I didn't ask, but now I seem to think it is urine.
Now you've outed it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Get the luminol.
But in the French one, it's just really a shitty apartment. But
it's a run down. It's not really a shitty apartment. It's just run down. It needs a little TLC.
But in Point of No Return, like, I don't, it was a crack house at some point. I don't know what happened there.
I don't know what it is, but I'm like, I would have just been living on the cot on the beach the whole time. Yeah. Like,
or just on the
damn
balcony of that place.
You know what I did like? Jesus. Is the layout of both apartments was essentially the same. It was like they were almost it's identical.
True. Yeah.
Right? Aside from, I mean, even the slope roofs.
Nice open concept.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. They were very similar.
Yeah, so they tried really hard to keep the core of the films the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it baffles me that for a film that was like the 8th highest grossing film in France at the time, it and jeez, I have no idea how to translate this. The budget for the film was 50 million francs.
Ooh, okay.
And grossed...
FYI, that's a lot.
It's U.S. gross, so I couldn't find a global gross or a France gross, but it was a little over 5 million in the U.S. alone. So I don't know what...
I think it definitely made more than France. Like, I can't remember how francs were at that time, because I've been to Paris around that time.
Yeah, but I mean, it was a pretty global phenomenon. Like, the film did very well globally. And to, you know, remake it for American audiences and not call it Nikita, was a little baffling to me, honestly. I guess I'm guessing they figured that was too foreign of a name.
Too Russian.
Too Russian.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, you're right.
Because remember, late 80s, early 90s, there was still a lot of anti-Russian
sentiment. Yeah, this is early 90s,
right?
93
and
was
it
the
also,
remake.
And it also kind of, to the point when you look at the end scene, the end mission, that's like in the Russian embassy. Like, it's very...
Yeah, it is, yeah. In the original. There was one thing I was going to mention when you're talking about all the other media that came out of this original movie. There is another remake.
Yeah, and it's called The Black Hat.
Yes, and it's...
What?
Yeah.
It's from 1991, so it's actually before Point of No Return, and it was a Hong Kong remake. Very, very close remake, apparently.
Yeah. Unauthorized. They actually had permission to do the remake. Then Disney bought the rights in the U.S., so they had to cancel their remake, and they had to make enough adjustments so it wasn't a straight-up remake.
Yeah, but it's very obvious that it is.
Yeah. And I was going to try and watch it. Just for the sake of watching it.
Yeah, I didn't know about it.
But I just didn't get around to it because I had so much trouble watching the first two.
Yeah. Like, that's, I don't know, that's something to maybe discuss. Like, is it, like, how close to be a remake? Like, what are the rules? How close can you be and it not be a remake?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's not like there aren't a lot of Chinese knockoffs of things.
That's true.
Yeah, but I mean, like, this is a remake, but, like, the main character is different. The call name's different.
Yeah.
It's death penalty. It's not, they're not victim suicide.
In this case, it openly acknowledges that it's a remake, and they use the script by Luc Besson as their source material.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that certainly defines it as a remake right there.
I'm just wondering, like, how some of these places, when they do the knockoffs, how close they can get without getting into trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why I wanted to watch the remake, but apparently, the Hong Kong remake, apparently it's really bad, though.
Oh, okay.
Apparently it's really poor.
I guess that's how you don't get caught. They don't care. Yeah. It's just so terrible, nobody's going to watch it.
And oftentimes when we watch these movies and the characters are watching movies on TV,
mm-hmm.
I always want to know what they're watching.
Ooh, yes.
So, Point of No Return. She is watching, this happens about an hour 24 into the movie. And it is a Bette Davis and Claude Rains movie called Deception from 1946.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
There you go.
I didn't have a chance to look into that particular movie, but I'm sure thematically there's something there.
Certainly there is.
I was going to try and find the one that she was watching in Nikita, because she was also sitting watching a movie.
Yeah, that I couldn't find. So.
Yeah, that didn't come up. All I saw was that it was over. I just saw the end.
We're almost at the end of our podcast as well. And, of course, you guys can always be part of the conversation. You never are. You guys are the quietest but most devout audience we have. I guess if you're an invader, you don't want to get caught.
Maybe we should ask them questions.
What would you... Yeah. I want to know if somebody has seen Black Cat and to give us a text version of that. Tell us the differences on that. If you've seen it, either our Chinese audiences or American ones,
or have you seen a role that would make us like Dermot Mulroney?
Oh God, yeah.
Aside from Young Guns,
besides Young Guns, I didn't mind him in Young Guns.
I like Young Guns a lot, but I don't know. I mean,
he was fine in it,
scared,
but I didn't love him as a character.
I'm scared to go back and rewatch that.
His character was a bit of a dick in that too. But he was funny.
Yeah, true. He's funny, but I'm like going, I want, give us a role that just endears him to us. Just please. We want to find one.
Snarky brat packer.
We just need one. One, Gus.
Yeah, so if you know that movie, if you know that Dermot Mulroney movie that we might like.
Help us.
Or you've seen Black Cat. Let us know on Twitter at Invasion Remake or Invasion of the Remake over on Facebook, or you can email us an entire litany of things that you want to tell us at invasionoftheremake@gmail.com. And of course, support the podcast by just telling your friends about it. We are the coolest podcast ever. And if you think that, tell 5 friends, tell 10 friends, spread the word around. If you see us, make a tweet or a post on Facebook, like it and share it with other people, especially when we post a new episode. And of course, give us that 5-star rating over on iTunes and Stitcher or however you consume us. And
consume
if you have
us?
That's right, consume us.
That just sounds so bad.
Well, you just make that as you will. and if you have a free moment, write a review. I mean, that also helps. But the 5-star ratings and really help us out, gets us moving on the charts, and more eyeballs will see us as they do searches for movie podcasts such as ours.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Remember, we're not just talking to each other; we're talking to you.
That's right, and we want you to be part of the conversation. So, you know. Like us on Facebook, retweet us, find us over on Twitter. I don't have the most amazing, we don't have a lot of Twitter followers yet. We got about double that over on our Facebook account. So if you dig us, like us, wherever. I think the Facebook forum's a little kinder and gentler to us. there's a weird bitterness in Twitter, so I'm okay with...
Yeah, just Facebook us.
Yeah, I like the Facebook people.
Like more. Us.
Even though our Twitter followers are cool too. They're also equally quiet, but
they were quiet, but maybe I don't, some of them were with us at the Academy Awards, I hope.
That's right. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Yeah,
we did our best. It's a lot of work. Yeah. Live tweeting is a lot of work.
We were both going, I don't know if I want to do this again.
It's very hard, guys. We did not realize this.
The episode's done quite well, so thanks for joining us on that. So nice. We might do another Oscar special next year. So
yay.
Yeah. That's always fun, even though it's a complete break from format. But, you know, you guys should be used to that by now. So, anything you guys want to add before we go? Anything you guys want to plug? Jeff is, again, like I said, he's going to be absent for a little while. He is. He purchased a business called The Video Game Trader.
Yeah.
I think I'm okay to say that now because it's out there. But more to come as things develop there. He hasn't got the website and stuff for me to give you yet. But if you are here in Calgary, go check that out.
For sure.
Best place to get video games. So they got two locations here
in
Calgary.
Lots of stuff there.
Lots of cool stuff. So go check them out.
And Jeff's got plans. Oh, he's got plans.
Because that's Jeff.
For sure.
While you're visiting Great Video Game Trader, after you're done buying video games, come back down the street. I'm just down the road from the Center Street location, and go visit Words and Pictures.
Yes.
And you can, I don't know, I'll sign something for you or sell something to you.
Or show you a wide array of lovely things.
And depending on the day, he might actually be mean to you, which is always a great experience when it comes from Jay.
I feel like I'm getting kinder and gentler in my old age.
Okay, but we were here before the podcast started, and stuff was going wrong.
Oh God, this was
daylight savings time is ass.
Yeah, March 13th, we set our I lost an hour, and everything wanted to update at the same time, but neither computer was working. It was nuts, but we made it happen. It's done. Here it is. That was La Femme Nikita and Point of No Return. We'll be back next week where we remake a film.
Yeah.
And I might get one off my bucket list. We'll see. So we'll see you guys next week. I'm Jason.
I'm Sam.
I'm Trish.
And we're out of here.
Yeah.